A very good evening to you, faithful listeners of Eagle FM and faithful listeners of Life Lessons. Now it's that time again of Saturday, right? It's that time where we keep you company now today. It's already 8 minutes past the hour of 1900 hours. And you know, once you hear the voice of Toby Mac speak life, you know, I'm just run about the corner somewhere that has to be on a Saturday runabout this time, right? And you know, I'm just somewhere about to bring in a wonderful guest, or it's very hardly that I go solo, but you know, I always have to grace you with the people that have the knowledge and ask me a question, how I find them. You know what? I don't know, but yeah. So we are joined by a wonderful doctor in studio with us today, and his name is Brian Bock, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Finally, you're back in the country.
Yes, finally.
I've been meaning to bring this doctor here, but the problem is, he's always somewhere, you know, but for our own benefit,
yes,
I believe.
Definitely serving. Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah. It's a pleasure and honor to be back in the country, mm-hmm, and to be back here as well.
Yeah,
on the show.
Doctor,
thank you
welcome
so much.
Back. Welcome
thank you so
back.
Much for the invitation as well.
Of course. Now, of course, tonight we're talking about mental health again and again. And I said, let's talk about mental health again and again and again and again. And I think, you know what? Just when you think mental health won't actually hit you, it will hit you just, you know, in a moment when you didn't expect it, something may just trigger it. And then you know what? Yeah. Now, of course, that's something that I'm going to have assistance from the doctor to break it down. Some of those things that really trigger, you know, those, I don't know the right words, but yeah, you know, trigger you to actually come to that point where you need to reach out for counseling, mm-hmm, and we'll break it down and speak about it. But we will start off with his journey. First of all, I think we'll start off with the fact that he just landed, y'all. Now, doctor, I know that, you are out. Yeah. Not just on vacation. Let me make it clear.
Yes.
Yeah. But, first let me find out, what do you think about, although you are a medical doctor, what do you think about always continuously educating yourself? You know, going places so that you can serve the people better. What's your take on that?
Yeah. Thank you very much for that question. Yeah. And it's like, it's as if you planned it very well.
Nee.
So those people who know me very well know that I'm definitely an advocate for, you know, continuous professional development.
Mm.
I, for one, and it's one of the things I stand for, it's one of the things I educate, you know, my colleagues within the fraternity and everybody else, is that you have to continuously, you know, keep up, you know, with the trends. You need to keep on reading, you need to keep on informing yourself on current affairs. And in as much as you have a specific trait, you know, in as much as you are a medical doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, that you should never, ever, ever limit yourself to your trait as well. Because I keep on saying you are not your profession.
Mm.
You know, you are a profession is more of an 8-to-5, but who and what are you beyond your 8-to-5? And this is where I'm so passionate about empowering yourself, whether it's with additional information within your trait or acquiring new skills. And definitely, I'm definitely an advocate for that, especially for, you know, youth development, professional development, leadership, mentorship, because I believe that the answers that we are looking for are not really in high buildings and high offices, but they're in our community.
Yeah.
So we need to make efforts to reach our communities, to be within the community and to work from within the community. And that is, for me, one of the key effective measures to bring about change in our communities.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that, Yanni. So in other words, continuously have to educate yourself, know what's happening. So that
especially, you know, apart from, you know, the medical fraternity, which requires you to continuously, you know, educate yourself, any other profession, definitely you need to, you know, improve yourself. You know, I'm an advocate for, you know, attending conferences, networking, meeting new people, exchanging ideas. And it has been such an empowering journey for myself, but also for others that I keep on encouraging, you know, to embark upon this journey. Mm-mm-mm. Because what you know today may not be relevant tomorrow.
Action.
And, you know, the aim is to remain relevant. And yeah, that's definitely very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Now, of course, you started off in your journey, first of all, as a medical doctor before you actually, came into mental health, wellness and all that,
yes,
right?
Okay. Yes, yes.
Tell us your journey about that. Like what drove you to go and study medicine all these many years in school? You know, and you're like,
you know, the journey is quite long. The other day I was a keynote speaker at a matric, you know,
yeah,
dance just during this week. And I sort of, you know, spoke some motivation and inspiration in high school leavers. And I told them, do you guys know that it took me almost 7 to 9 years before I could ever earn my first income?
Wow.
And everybody was looking at me like, you know, but, when you have a passion and a calling for something. And I think for me, what was very particular about my journey, when I started off, I wanted to be so many things.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I'm grateful for is my community, because I believe my community shaped me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you know the African proverb that says it takes a whole
village to raise a child.
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of people saw the profession in me. But at that time, I didn't see it.
Yeah,
I was like, no, I want to be an engineer. I want to be a geologist. I wanted to be, you know, all these cool things. And people were like, no, you fit to be a doctor. And in the beginning, I was like, will I be able to do it? Mm. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But then what people saw in me in terms of my character, in terms of my ability,
passion for people.
Yes, my passion for people, my passion for serving others. I think that is one of the things I'm so grateful for in my life, because other people saw in me what I could not see at
Thank
the time.
You.
And, you know, when it actually happened, to date, I never regretted it, because it is the best, you know, career choice that I could have ever made.
Yeah.
Serving
mm-hmm.
and serving from within my community. So it was a long journey. It was a challenging journey, but definitely it is a passion.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, as I grew along the profession, my passion for mental health advocacy stemmed from a lot of factors.
Yeah.
You know, even when I was a student, a medical student already, and I remember when I did my first clinical rotation,
mm-hmm.
you know, in mental health, I already saw that there is a need, you know, for more professionals in the space, but also a need for people who do not necessarily have the voice to speak for themselves,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
you know, for someone else to amplify and be the voice for them.
Mm.
Generally, it is a, or let me rather say it was, or it still is, a field that didn't gain as much recognition as it needed to.
Yeah.
And this is one of the reasons why I feel that we're in the situation we're in today. Because, you know, there's a lot of stigma attached to, you know, mental health in general, mental health services in general. And I think the narrative is about to change.
Yeah.
I think that is what so many leaders are working on, is to sort of change the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So, getting into the space, not only as a medical doctor, but a mental health advocate, you know, is definitely a passion.
Mm.
It's a passion. And I always say advocacy is not just a commitment. It is a calling. I don't think anybody just wakes up and says, oh, no, I want to do mental health. Oh, no, I want to be a SRHR advocate. You know, it's something that you have witnessed and something that you probably also, you know, sometimes experience. So, you know, whether yourself, family members, relatives in your community.
And it can also be draining. You must have the passion to keep on going.
Yes, you must have the passion to keep on going. So mental health advocacy for me, of course, officially started about a few years ago.
Mm.
Yet again, you know, when somebody, people will come to me and say, but you know, you are doing so well.
Mm.
You should probably explore. You should probably do more of this work. And then the journey started with 1 year, you know, doing public speaking, you know, doing awareness raising campaigns in the community. And it has just been journey upon journey that I'm so grateful for.
Yeah.
And, you know, the impact, you know, when we talk about change, we want to hear impact.
Of course.
The impact definitely not only personally, but also when you see the work that you are doing in the community and the positive outcomes that really gives you the drive to continue doing more.
Mm.
Yes, of course, you might face criticism. People will be like, but why? You know, aren't you tired? Don't you have other things to do yeah. when you knock off from work, you know?
yeah.
But then when the passion is there, passion above everything else.
Thank you.
Yes,
yeah.
definitely.
And especially also when you see the people, like I love that particular aspect that you said about voice, being a voice for the people. I think so many times we think being a voice for the people is only just about voice coming out.
Yes.
There's a lot of paperwork that goes into that as well.
Yes.
Know? And having yourself also having to understand whatever it is that has to be advocated for and actually reading it and understanding it. Mm-hmm. Imagine somebody who's at the village, doesn't have the access to, you know, even speak for themselves or speak about some of these things, and you're actually being their voice.
Yes. And it's a very good observation because, you know, addressing mental health challenges, it's a 360 dimensional challenge. It needs both strategic intervention and operational intervention. Mm. When I say strategic intervention, it's more in terms of policy frameworks, guidelines, you know, legislation, you know, etc.
Yeah.
From a strategic perspective. But then from an operational perspective, it also means, you know, getting into the communities, raising awareness, you know, educating the public, health education, promotion, prevention, and rehabilitation. These are all, you know, key public health aspects and components that should be integrated into mental health care as well, because there's a very big intersection between, you know, public health in general and, you know, public mental health. So that is also very important. So it should be tackled from all aspects, whether it's legislative, whether it's, you know, on the ground, whether it's advocacy. Everybody needs to pull together in order to address mental health issues. You know, and that is one thing that I'm so passionate about and advocating for, is that it's, for me, it's a 360 approach. I always say it's a 360 approach. We need everyone. We need community leaders. We need faith-based organizations. We need traditional leaders. Everyone is needed, you know, to combat the stigma against mental health, but also to, you know, address mental health issues in the community.
Yeah. Doctor, I want to ask this question, coming from, we want to look from your lenses. Yeah.
Yes.
I hope that makes sense. So when, how do you view, a patient, you know, who has, of course, some mental instability, is that the right word to use?
Challenges.
Thank you. Who has mental challenges? Of course, a lay person would look at them with different eyes. Some would look with a sympathetic eyes, not really empathetic eyes. But for you, having understood all this, you know, and having understood a person's well-being and having studied anatomy and all that kind of stuff, with what lenses do you see a person with mental health challenges, and also bringing us in on how we should actually view these people?
I think for all healthcare practitioners, there should, first of all, be no difference between whichever client or patient or service user that you see. I think that is the first approach.
Mm.
And yet again, that also comes back to stigma. And stigma comes in various forms. It can be in the community, it can be institutional, it can be professional. So holistic care and holistic, a holistic approach is very important. And what do we mean with holistic? Holistic means, an approach that goes hand in hand with even the WHO approach of, you know, of health. WHO speaks about
it. Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than The Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a 10?
Okay, doctor, so sorry about that. Yes. you're telling us about looking at somebody with the mental challenges from your lenses.
I think from a healthcare perspective, as I said, there should be no differentiation between anybody presenting with any kind of, you know, challenge, seeking for healthcare. I think that is the first point where stigma needs to be, you know, dealt with, because every client, every patient, every service user, in front of a healthcare worker, there should be no differentiation, or there should be no discrimination. But what I want to emphasize on is a holistic approach. I mean, if we look at the WHO definition of health, which is a state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being.
So
the individual that presents in front of you, you need to look at it from a holistic perspective, you know. Apart from mental health issues, do they have any other physical health issues that might contribute to the mental health issues, or do they have mental health issues that can contribute to the physical health issues? And of course, the social aspect. Are there social aspects that contribute to their mental health? So it's really a holistic approach that you need to look at. And this is why healthcare professionals never work in isolation. This is why we also speak of a multidisciplinary approach. And so that's why you have the medical doctors. That's why you have got specialists. That's why you've got clinical psychologists. That's why you've got social workers. That's why you've got occupational therapists and all the other health professionals. Because at the end of the day, it's a holistic patient care approach that, you know, that you need to award every patient. Every service user has the right to all those services.
When I actually came to find out the definition of World Health Organization about health, I found it very interesting. Absence. It's not just merely the absence of disease
or infirmity
or And then you mention about taking it from a holistic approach. In other terms, also in my mind, mental health challenges are only from social issues. Now that you speak about it, it got me thinking about, oh wait, I can be bedridden for a particular sickness, and that can cause mental challenges to myself.
Mental health challenges are definitely what we say, they are multifactorial.
Okay.
They can be caused by a variety or they can be several factors that cause. And this is why we talk about a biopsychosocial approach, meaning it could be biological factors, such as it could be a genetic predisposition. By example, if this certain mental health condition has been running in the family, or you have a genetic predisposition towards developing a certain mental health disorder, it could be sometimes certain mental health conditions are more prevalent in different genders, by example. So those are the genetic and the biological components that can, of course, contribute to someone developing a mental health disorder. And then there are psychological factors. Psychological factors stem from things like childhood trauma, stresses, psychological stresses, separation, divorce, trauma, witnessing accidents, adverse life events. Those are psychological causes. And then you get to social causes, what you have been referring now to, which can also be environmental causes, which can be environmental stressors, such as, you know, financial issues, issues with intimate partners, work-related issues.
So it's conflict at home.
Yes, conflict at home, substance use or substance abuse. And all these factors can also be interconnected, you know. So sometimes a lot of people think that mental health issues only stem from, as you said, social issues, but these are actual real medical conditions that has several different causes, as I said, be it biological causes, be it psychological causes, or be it social causes. There's definitely a variety, and sometimes they can occur concurrently. You know, and this is where the health professionals, different health professionals come in, as I said earlier, especially when it comes to mental health. challenges where you have the doctors, the medical practitioners, or the general practitioners. You've got specialists, who are now specialist psychiatrists. You have clinical psychologists. You've got social workers. You've got occupational therapists. You've got mental health nurses. Yeah. Each and every cadre has an important role to play towards ensuring the well-being of, you know, individuals undergoing mental health challenges.
I mean, and you know what? I'm just asking myself, if we have so much of this, like, at our disposal, and I think, let's give credit where it's due. Our government, I would say, they're trying in that aspect, although we do lack, of course, many of them. But we can't pin that on the government. Let's pin it on the people themselves.
Yes.
Who don't want to go out and, you know,
yeah,
and study in this aspect.
Mm.
If we have so much of this, why don't we actually make use of it, you know?
Yeah. I think over the years, as I said, there's also been a lot of stigma attached to, you know, in the community, especially in our African community, related to some of, you know, these professionals.
Yeah.
And for many years, some of these professions, you know, mostly you need to go study for them outside of the country.
Yeah.
But, you know, things are changing and things have changed.
Yeah.
So there's... It's again multifactorial, but again, I think a lot of awareness needs to come into play.
Yeah,
when
we
go out into schools and do career fairs and awareness, you know, we should also start advocating, you know, for you know, high school learners and graduates to start getting into these professions. I think it's more of the awareness that needs to be raised the world, because there is a need.
There is
definitely a need. But from a community perspective, definitely a lot of stigma in the community, but also the trajectory is sometimes very long.
Okay.
Also in some of these professions.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that might also be discouraging sometimes, because even for you to become a registered clinical psychologist, it's an undergrad and then postgraduate, then internship. For you to become a specialist, you know, you need to do your 6 to 7 years of general, 2 years of internship with an additional 4 years of specialization again. So the trajectory, you know, sometimes can be a little bit
discouraging,
you know, discouraging, but at the end of the day, you know, you are serving the community.
Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes people look at it and say, ah, it takes so long to get there.
Yeah.
But, you know, the impact, again, you know,
it's massive.
Is massive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So those are some of the, I'm not saying it's all of them, but those are definitely some of the reasons. And obviously issues of funding, issues of scholarships. I think we need more funding and scholarships to be awarded, you know, for these kind of professions, you know, for the youth to actually be interested or be able to pursue some of these careers as well.
What's that? Let me not put you on the spot with this one. And of course, I know patient confidentiality, but
no.
I kind of wanted to ask, what's that particular time that you had a patient? It was quite so challenging. You had to go home and just ponder and think about it. Did you ever experience something like that?
I think as healthcare professionals generally, we are human beings.
Exactly.
And this is where I was saying, you also need to take care of your own mental health, because you can never pour from an empty cup. Yes. So I think it's very important as healthcare workers for us, first and foremost, to take care of our own mental health so that we can serve others better. I think that is very important. And that's why, you know, we are advocating for wellness. In all aspects, at all levels, definitely for us to make sure that as an individual, as a healthcare worker, you are physically well, you're mentally well, in order for you to, you know, render top tier quality to every single individual.
That's so true. Given, I know you spoke in the beginning, about how other people actually, the community kind of was the one to see this qualities in you, and you didn't see it yourself. Now, being in this profession for this longest time that you've been in there, looking back, would you say, yes, most definitely, I made the right choice. I'm in the right profession. This is where I belong, to serve the people and to really also just advocate for them.
Yes, most definitely. You know, looking back into the trajectory, and sometimes you tell yourself, it's been so long.
Mm.
And of course, the way forward is still longer.
It's still longer.
But it's very rewarding, as yes. I say. The ability to serve others, the ability, I think the most rewarding feeling ever for any healthcare professional is to see the change and the impact, the recoveries, you know, people that recover from treatment, people that do so well. And I think that is definitely what keeps us going. It's definitely that rewarding feeling of, I have done something, you know, I have done something not only to bring change to the community, but even at individual level. Sometimes you might not remember people, and people will come to you and say, "Oh, doctor, do you remember me from so many years ago? You know, you helped me, yeah, or you treated me, and everything. You know,
you treat so many patients, so you can't remember every one of them."
So definitely, it's a rewarding feeling. I think when your purpose in life is to serve, you will never really, you know, feel short of anything. Let me put it that way. Because the gratification comes from serving others. Definitely. And yeah, it's a rewarding journey.
Yeah, I can imagine. Imagine you are having a bad day yourself. Like you said, we are human beings. Maybe things are not going so well, family wise, somebody's sick, you just lost a loved one. And then boom, here comes somebody and says, "Doctor, do you remember me? I came in so bad. I was going through so much. And now here I am." You know, and you can see the smile on their face. That just kind of just lifts you up to say, you know what?
Definitely.
I think we should keep going.
It's a very rewarding feeling. And it also just encourages one to do better.
Yeah.
And to push yourself to do more. I think that is something for me personally, is that ability and that drive to say, okay, I've done this, I've achieved this, but what can I do? You know, where can I improve? What can I do better? You know, which communities can we impact more or create more impactful change? So it's that constant drive and that constant rewarding feeling and the passion. I think passion speaks for everything and above and beyond everything.
Yeah.
If the passion is there, definitely. I always tell people that if passion is there, it will never feel like a single day of work.
Yeah,
because you actually enjoy what you're doing.
That's true.
And that is the most rewarding feeling.
That's so true. And I just hope that we are, you know, inspiring somebody at home. I don't know, perhaps they are currently in their grade 12 and they were not sure what to go and study, or maybe they wanted to do this and somebody's kind of like discouraging them. You just speaking about that, I hope that it's really just touching them and encouraging them to just go ahead.
But
all in all, let's talk about individual society itself. For us, you know, when we talk about mental health, You hear your cousin is going through something, so, but you just don't even know where to start, you know? And maybe the person doesn't even want to go for counseling, doesn't even want to be booked into, you tell them, okay, go to a government hospital, it's for free and they can help you out. But then the person, where then do I start? And you can see, I think signs will be there. And I'll also want you to get into that, some of the signs of somebody who's depressed. You know, sometimes we just overlook the signs, what they say, how they behave, but where can I start, you know?
I think where we are currently as a nation, and I've been hearing a lot of our leaders have been talking about creating safe spaces. That is very important. I think we all need to start creating safe spaces individually, just for you to start listening, you know, to someone. That is very important. I think the most important for someone who is in any form and kind of distress is that ability to be able to go to someone and feeling heard and feeling listened. That is the first and very important thing, I think, when it comes to health seeking behavior. Of course, it is always recommended to seek for professional help.
Yes.
Definitely. And I always say, there's a difference between counseling and there's a difference between therapy. And of course, we will get into that a little bit later. But we need to create safe spaces in the community. It is not.
We need to, like, yes, for other people.
For other people. Okay. You need to create safe spaces for other people so that when somebody is calling in saying, hey, I'm not okay.
Before
I'm not
they even,
well, yes,
for them to be able to say, you know what, I think I can reach out to Dr. Bock.
Definitely. Okay. You know, you need to create a safe space so that person should be able to feel comfortable to reach out and share. And of course, if you are not a professional, the first thing that you need to do is to link this person to a professional.
Or yeah,
you say, listen, I'm hearing you. You know, what you are feeling is valid, because I think sometimes people do not want to speak up because they feel, or, you know, sometimes people can discard or disregard whatever they
say. Like, I feel like it's a minor
about
thing.
Like, come on, you know, you're a guy. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about? You're going through a tough time. You know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
But if we create safe spaces to say, I'm listening, I'm hearing what you're saying, let's go together. Let's go and get professional help. Let's go to the nearest health facility for you to get professional help. That is actually very important. And there are so many resources within the community that one can, you know, reach out to, to sort of, you know, facilitate that link and that transition into, you know, getting professional help, whether it's in state, whether it's in private. Because imagine somebody, you know, is going through a mental health crisis and it's late at night, for example, and you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
There's always, always, always services available, you know, and it's just for us to also start educating ourselves. I think part of health education is not only about telling people, these are the signs and the symptoms, don't do this, don't do that, or this is recommended, or that is not recommended.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's about also giving people access to where you can get information and what are the sources of information, where you can get help.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like toll-free lines and hospital services that are easily accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And so information sharing is actually also very important.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, true. I kind of always tell them, there was a time I actually read out, but that was quite some time ago, hey, Philip Trust, Mental Health Institute. And I was actually told that you can start off at your clinic. Is that so?
Yes, yes, yes. So depending on where you are and where you find yourself, whether it's private health facilities or state health facilities, there are always resources within your community that you can go to. I mean, state health facilities run, you know, most of the state health facilities run on a 24-hour basis, especially the bigger hospitals the bigger centers.
Oh,
so
I'm saying because I'm referring to a state mental.
Yes, no. So all these services are usually 24 hours accessible. You will always find a healthcare worker that will be able to attend to you.
True.
And if that healthcare worker is not able to attend to you at that particular point in time, it could be for various reasons, level of expertise, they will always refer you to somebody that can render you the service. So I think we just need to educate ourselves that these services are available in the community.
Dr. Wait, let me give you a scenario. I'm in my bed and I don't feel so good, and suddenly I'm having some sort of suicide thoughts that they're triggered by, I don't know, something. Maybe I can't really pinpoint it, or you know, and it's in the middle of the night and I'm all by myself. Or maybe I'm with my kids at home and no other adult. Are you saying I can drive myself to the hospital?
You'll be attended.
And tell them that, you know what, I'm not fine, I'm battling suicide thoughts. Because I've heard people say, I feel like I'm hearing somebody say, go commit suicide. I'm not sick physically.
No, most definitely, definitely. And that is why the health facilities are there to assist individuals, whether it's a physical illness, whether it's a mental challenge, you know, healthcare workers work 24 hours. We are available. You know, there's always somebody that will be able to attend to somebody who is, you know, looking for help, who is in a crisis. And as I said, there are different caterers, there are different professionals that will be attending to you, whether it's a social worker, whether it's a clinical psychologist, whatever is relevant to the facility, whatever is available at the facility, whatever level of care is available, you definitely will be attended to.
And I think I've seen facilities like Katutura Hospital. They actually call the social worker to come and assess the patient and speak to them, because I mean, they are more equipped in that
definitely,
angle.
Definitely,
okay. Yeah.
appreciate that. Yeah, but anyway, let's take a commercial break and we'll be back shortly. Anyway, this is Life Lessons. If you're only tuning in now, well, we'll be back shortly from a commercial break and a musical break.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM,
WB in the Pick a Box birthday promo. Enter today with your Smart Buy card. Get a 2 kg bag of Tastic Rice for just $39.99. 3x1 liter Crystal Gold Olive Oil Blend for $199.99. A 500 gram Sunshine D Original Brick for only $19.99. And 2 2-liter Fanta bottles for a sweet $37.99. Learn more about Pick a Box at www.vurmanbrock.com. T's and C's apply. We care.
Shadow.
Okay, and we are back. You are tuned into Life Lessons right here on Eagle FM. Now I'm joined in studio by mental health advocate and medical doctor, Dr. Brian Buck. Now, Dr. Brian, we get a lot of situations where, of course, I think society has also just come to understand and know that a lot of men are not willing to speak up. They're not willing to go for counseling. They're not willing to even speak to their friends. And I'm wondering, wait, men don't have friends? Like, we do. Like, there's no way I'll be suffering in silence. You understand? Yeah. Mm-hmm. We women are most likely to call a cousin, a sister, what, and tell them this is what I'm going through and cry about it. Mm-hmm. Now, men, on the other hand, they've been taught, don't cry. But mm-hmm. you know what? I have to confess something while we are there. My firstborn son likes to cry. Mm. You know, I think it's an environmental thing. Let me not make excuses for myself, but let me just say, like, I would literally like, you cry over everything. Mm. But here we are encouraging them to cry, but then again, wait, how do we strike balance between those? Because I wouldn't want a husband where everything is just crying now. So, but yeah, what do you say?
Yeah, it's definitely, I would say it's very contextual.
Mm.
If we look into where we are geographically, in terms of our African norms, traditional gender norms, societal expectations.
Yeah.
The narrative is a little bit different. You know, it is expected of a man. A man must do this. A man must do that. A man must not do this and must not do that.
Mm.
When people look up to you as the breadwinner, you know, as the one who provides the support, it's very difficult for you to show some level of vulnerability, because sometimes that vulnerability can be interpreted as weakness and you don't want to appear weak.
True.
And this is why sometimes we internalize feelings and suffer in silence, because the moment you become vulnerable, it is like you are showing a sign of weakness.
Mm.
And as a traditional African man, that is not allowed. That is not within, as you were saying now, you wouldn't want a husband that, you know, cries over everything. And
but I want to cry and I want to be afforded that.
And you
want
to be
to
understood,
cry.
You know. So it's definitely, it's a cultural practice and cultural norms that we also can't change overnight.
Okay.
I think with the Western world, it's a little bit different because of the way, you know, they grew up and they were raised.
Yeah.
And definitely it's really challenging in a sense of where do we draw the line.
Mm.
But what we are encouraging everyone, including men, is to learn how to speak up and of course creating safe spaces.
Yes.
Having that one or two persons that you confide in that you can speak to, whether it's a traditional leader, whether it's a faith-based leader, whether it's professional, whether it's a community counselor, whether it's a social worker, whether it's a health counselor, whether it's a life skills teacher, whether it's a clinical psychologist. Mm. But there would always be someone. You don't necessarily have to deliberately and explicitly make yourself vulnerable to anyone and everyone. What we're saying is find someone to talk to. Find someone to share your distress with.
Yeah.
Because eventually it is going to become overwhelming.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. While we're at this aspect, how do you suggest wives encourage their spouses? You know, having been married myself, I've noticed tracing back. I've noticed some of the mistakes that I've made. You know, you'll expect your partner to be just, I don't know, all perfect. You don't leave room for improvement. You don't leave room for their mistakes and stuff like that. And of course, and I think you spoke about, of course, then the man also doesn't want to be seen as I'm weak or I'm vulnerable. But then again, they are only human beings, for goodness sake. How do you suggest maybe wives or partners help their partners? Because at the end of the day, you don't want to hear, wait, I thought we're in a relationship and boom, the person committed suicide. And you know, it has had nothing to do with you. Like, you couldn't open up to me. And then you feel like I've created that safe space. Just how do we then help men to,
I think open up? It definitely goes back to what you have been saying earlier, is that you need to also ask yourself, have I been a safe space for this person?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's in your words. Sometimes it's in your demeanor.
Yeah.
You don't always have to say it, but your demeanor, your behavior can show that person that maybe you are not a safe space. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can be intimate partners, but it doesn't necessarily mean you are still a safe space for this person.
True.
And we need to do a lot of introspection to see whether this person can be vulnerable towards me.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? Mm-hmm. Can they talk to me? Can they share whatever distress it is with me? And this is why we are saying sometimes, you know, there are some things that you are not so comfortable to share with your wife, that you would rather share with a pastor, a priest, a community leader. And that should also be okay, you know, as long as you have that safe space and as long as you have that environment for you to share your distress with someone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes also I think maybe as a wife or as a partner, you would want to know everything and anything about
your
partner,
right? We don't give them room to be themselves anymore.
Yes. So as an individual, who am I? Who am I? Who was I before I became a husband?
Yeah.
You know, who am I as an individual? What constitutes my feelings, my preferences, my likes, my dislikes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at that level, every individual should also be understood. Yes, I'm a father. Yes, I'm a husband. Yes, I'm a community leader. Yes, I'm a manager. Or I'm doing this and this. But, you know, above and beyond all of that, who am I as a person?
Yeah.
And sometimes really, you need to look at yourself to ask, am I really the safe space for this person within my demeanor?
Mm.
You know, and sometimes I say I'm a firm believer of energies and auras.
Mm-mm.
And sometimes the energy that you carry around you, is it welcoming? Is it friendly?
Mm.
Does it encourage active engagement?
Even in friendship,
you know, sometimes we carry this demeanor and energy around ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you would find that there are people who others naturally are inclined to because of their demeanor. You know, and I think it is, we should just encourage people to speak out. We are not saying go and speak to your wife necessarily, go and speak to whoever, but speak up, find a safe space, find someone that you can confide in.
Yeah.
And, quite frankly, if you are scared about what you've confided in to someone reaching somebody else.
Mm.
That's why they are professionals
who are bound
by ethical principles, who cannot share what you have shared with
them. Who are complete strangers.
Yes, who are complete strangers. And they are bound by ethical practice and principles.
Mm, mm, mm.
So I think that sort of awareness just needs to be increased in the community, that there are definitely safe spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are trained, people that have gone professional, that have gone to study for years and years and years,
to
be able to render that service.
And I think we look down on them because if we are not making use of their services, then we are kind of like, in a way, saying, I don't need you. And then when things really reach rock bottom and then that's when you want to come out in it.
You know, and I always say, therapy is not only when you're in a crisis.
Uh-huh.
I always say, why is it that we wake up in the morning, we go to the gym, we're so proud to boast about 5 a.m. club and this and this and this. But what are you doing for your own mental health? You know, how often are you doing mental check-ins? How often are you doing the introspection check-ins? You know, how often are you doing mental health checks with yourself?
Yeah.
So this is definitely... it's difficult to become aware and to have self-awareness, to be constantly aware of your feelings and your emotions and your thoughts. It's very difficult, but it is something that can be learned and it's something that's very important because if we aren't self-aware to say, when I'm feeling like this, I need to end here. I need to, you know, I can't go above and beyond.
I need to reach out.
I need to reach out. I need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
That is very important, actually.
Mm. You know, I've said this before and I'm never really ashamed, never shy to even say it. There was a time when I went through so much that a friend's parents were in the same class and were very close friends. And then, his parents, because they became also like family.
Yeah.
When I was going through so much, they then called me to go over to their house and even had to ask my mom for permission. And then, you know what? They booked for me, to go and see, was it a psychologist or a social worker? I don't know. At Etoshakati Hospital. Now, going in there, I was so scared. So I was like, anything I share here, she's going to call the people to come in, you know, handcuff me and take me to the mental institute. But you know, the conversation was so long. I think it went up to 2 hours and she was just listening to me. And, you know, she kind of just looked at me like, oh, you know, and I was so glad. I came back so relieved. It was one session. Maybe I should have continued with more, but it was so necessary, you know?
Yeah.
It made me feel really like, wow, this was necessary. But you know what, Doc? We have a commercial break coming up. Let's pick that and then we'll be back shortly.
Okay, sure.
From sunrise to supper time, Namib Mills is there, feeding the nation with care, quality, and heart.
We believe food is more than nourishment. It's dignity. It's hope. It's the start of a better tomorrow.
Through sustainable production processes, job creation, and affordable, nutritious food, Namib Mills is driving economic growth one plate at a time. Because when we say feeding the nation,
we mean uplifting lives,
empowering communities, and building a future where no one is left behind.
Namib Mills, proudly Namibian,
passionately feeding the nation. Namib Mills,
feeding the nation. Get ready to embrace a world of possibilities at the University of Namibia with a community of ambitious students, researchers and innovators. Shape your future with a wide range of programs in agriculture, engineering, natural sciences, commerce and management, law, education, human sciences, health sciences or veterinary medicine. Apply online at unam.edu.na. UNAM, open your mind.
And we are back. We're talking about mental health. And I said, let's talk about mental health again and again and again. I don't think we can ever exhaust this topic, hey, until we really get to that point where we know that. But even when we do get there, we still have to continuously speak about it. Yeah. Doc, what do you think about me going to see that social worker? And I was so scared that anything I see here, what if she's going to call them now? And, you know, yeah.
You know, as I said, healthcare workers, especially all healthcare workers, including mental health professionals and, you know, anybody in the profession, are definitely bound by ethical principles.
Yeah.
So I think there and then you should know that it is definitely a safe space.
Okay.
And that you should share, because remember, that individual can only help you as far as what you are sharing with them.
True.
If you don't also open up and share with them what your challenges are, it's going to be very difficult for them to actually help you as well. So you need to also, you know, be forthcoming in the sessions.
Mm-hmm.
But it also depends on the type of rapport that you build. Sometimes for people who are seeking mental health services, that initial process of building rapport with the practitioner is sometimes very difficult, but it's also sometimes very necessary for you to have established a good rapport. I sometimes get people who just, you know, people you talk to, and it's like, no, you know, I don't know, you know, I went for therapy, but my therapist and I, I don't feel like, and that is also okay.
Okay.
You know,
okay,
that
okay.
is very much okay. If you didn't build that rapport with your therapist, it's okay, because you also need to relate with this individual.
True.
It's okay. Then, you know, if you have the resources, if you have it, you avail, maybe then request for another individual that you feel like you are able to, you know, disclose your information.
Yeah. But let's talk about the part where there was one day after now that they had developed that relationship that I can actually go to a social worker. There was a time where I was in the capital city. Now I had come back, it was in the north. So I'd come back to the capital city and I went to the mall. And this mall, being in the mall was like a trigger, you know, to the situation I had been in before, when the situation was very good, when times were really nice, we would go to the mall, and then all of a sudden I'm by the mall by myself. I felt so it was so bad that I took a cab from the mall to Red Cross,
mm-hmm.
Katutura ShopRite, to go and see a psychologist or social worker.
Yes.
And the moment she just saw me, I broke down and cried.
Mm.
And she was like encouraging me to just cry. And that's for me personally, that's something that I love. If I'm crying, I would want you to encourage me to cry, yeah, and not tell me to stop. Yeah, because that's my coping mechanism, you know?
Most definitely.
Yeah. Mm. So the fact that she was doing that, I think I bonded with her even the more. We spoke. I went home. I was fine. Now I was booked for another session, only to come back. She's not there. Mm. She traveled and they want to give me someone else. And I didn't want. Mm. So how do we now deal with a patient? Like, let's say the situation is very critical and the person that just developed already, because I mean, it's so painful having to start the conversation all over again.
No, that is definitely understood. And sometimes it also depends on the, you know, wherever you are, you know, on resources that are available. I think in the immediate instance, we have what we call crisis intervention.
Okay.
And that, of course, is mostly done by, you know, whoever the professional is that is available.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know your preferred professional is not available and you are maybe not a risk their time or you are not in distress, you should allow yourself to undergo the crisis intervention, because I believe in that point, definitely you are in a crisis.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when you are out of crisis, you will still be able to be at liberty to, you know, see your therapist or your counselor. Yeah,
I see.
Yeah. So they do also perform what they... what we call crisis intervention, that means getting you out of that crisis, or what we also call perform psychological first aid. You know, just like when you have an injury, physical first aid.
Yeah.
There's also what they call psychological first aid. I'm not a clinical psychologist, so I don't want
to
get much into it, but there are different strategies as well that clinical psychologists apply to sort of get you out of a moment of crisis.
Mm,
yes.
I see. Mm. Okay. That's interesting. I'm learning a lot.
Psychological first aid. Yes.
Psychological first aid, which is necessary, especially when the situation is really critical, like what we call crisis.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
And this skill can also be transferred to lay cadres, to individuals like us, for example, who are not necessarily clinical psychologists.
Mm-hmm.
You can go a psychological first aid training, whereby at least you know how to manage, or how to not manage, but link someone who is in crisis to resources where they can definitely be helped. That is very important, because sometimes people will come to me and say, "Doc, I don't know what to do." Even a friend or somebody, I don't know what to do. You know, somebody just came to me and they're in tears and I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
So we should all be informed about this. We should all, undergo, you know, some form of awareness so that we can know how to assist someone.
Yeah.
Even if someone, as you said now, when you went and you were crying in front of someone, she encouraged you, the professional, to continue crying.
Yeah.
And in another setting, someone would be like, "But why are you crying? You know, is this even something you should be crying about?" You know?
Yeah.
Whether you're crying about someone, it was exactly. Like, how can you be crying? Yeah. Never, you should validate someone's feelings very particular point in time. That is very, very, very important.
So you get
the person out of danger, you listen to them, and then you link them to resources. I think that is one of the core principles to, you know, providing psychological first aid to someone.
Mm-hmm. And I think, let me go back to that part where you spoke about being, what do you call it? Safe space.
Yes.
Being a safe space. It's something that I've come to realize a lot of people, from many of the people that I know, are not really safe space, you know. They don't really listen to the next person. I think they listen too much in a rush to offer advice. Mm. And sometimes a person, all they need, if you don't have the right advice, is just for you to listen to them, you know. Mm. There's a particular person who, some people were not really getting waiting here. It's like, it's like as if they are rushing here to move on to the next stage, to grow, to whatever. And then I, on the other hand, I'm very, I can be quite patient with people because I want people to be patient with me, you know?
Yes, most definitely.
Yeah. Even when in a learning skill, you want to give the next person room
and an opportunity to learn as well
at their pace, not you rushing them like, okay, Dr. Bach got this in 3 weeks. I don't get why you were taking still 5 weeks and stuff like that. So in terms of patience, then how do we, I don't know. Maybe we need to educate more people. You did speak about awareness, but I think we can start everywhere with education. Let's really just educate everyone so that they will know how to best respond, how to best deal with people, whether it's faith-based organizations, whether it's in school, whether it's in the workplace, you know? I mean, even in work, even in the workplace, you're expected to be all this, cut everything together. But then I think
more
we forget. I think we forget that, hey, this person is a holistic person. I don't know if that makes sense. You know, they have family members that can also do something to perhaps trigger them. They have children, they have spouses, or they're in some sort of relationship. I think we really need to be forthcoming in that aspect. How do you then say we pull everybody together and just get them to have some sort of understanding?
I think, first of all, what I really want to emphasize on, and this is very important, is there's a difference between advice, counseling, and therapy.
Advice, counseling, and therapy.
Yes. Difference. And what we are really discouraging people when somebody is in a crisis is to start giving advice, because you are not necessarily a trained professional. Even therapists, you know, do not give people advice right away. You know, they provide therapy, and therapy has different modalities. And this is what we should be very careful of, because when someone is in distress and then they are presenting to you, you don't know what the actual situation is, and the first thing you want to do is start giving advice. No, don't do this, don't do that. But that comes from your personal biased, you know, opinions. But a trained professional who does not know this individual will be able to give a more, you know, objective way forward or treatment interventions for this person. And this is why, by all means, we always encourage people to seek professional help. There are different levels, whether it's community counselors, faith, religious counselors, religious leaders, you know, trained psychologists, social workers, community, whatever the cater is, everyone has undergone some sort of training to be able to provide that service to you. So it's just not me being in distress and going to a friend. Because you know what happens with advice? When you ask someone, or when you go for advice, you basically just want them to tell you what you want to hear. Because the moment they start telling you what you don't want to hear, you know, so that's, it becomes,
and because it's a friend, they know exactly what you want to hear. And often, just to get you out of the situation,
they might just tell you what you want to hear, which is definitely not advisable.
And then 5 days later, you're in the same situation again. Ah, man.
So when you open up and disclose to a friend, it's very important for you and this friend to agree to say, let's go and seek professional services together. Let's go and seek professional help. That is very important.
I agree. That's quite very important. Now, I think, you know, I personally witnessed... No, first, before I ask, I'll give you that scenario, let me talk about, in terms of a partner wants to go for counseling with their partner. Let's see, even for instance, a wife wants to say, okay, my husband, I noticed that we have been having some issues. Let's go for counseling. And then in most times, I know we have addressed the fact that men don't really want to go for counseling. In that aspect, would you then, because, I mean, a wife would then think, I think it's better when we go for counseling, the two of us, it will be more helpful. But if the partner then doesn't want to go, should they just go ahead by themselves, or should they rather just not go then?
You know, one thing about these kind of interventions, especially when it comes to couples counseling and therapy, there has to be some level of what we call intrinsic motivation, which means motivation that comes from the inside to sort of engage participation.
Yeah.
That is also very important. I think whichever partner is ready to start can start, most definitely.
Yeah.
And then, you know, later on sort of encourage the other individual, because you can't force someone
into therapy.
They won't be able to grasp, understand the concepts, follow through. Because remember, therapy is a process. It's not just one in and out, quick consultation.
Yeah.
It's a process. Sometimes you get homework. Sometimes you get assignments. Sometimes you get reflections. You have to come back and you talk and you reflect.
Yeah.
And you go back and you try again. You come back and you talk and you reflect. It's definitely a process. And
some couple, people, are you listening? Are you listening?
And some people don't have the patience for that. But as long as someone starts, you know, the other partner, the other individual will definitely get motivated, especially when they see the change from within you. Be the change that you want to see.
Yeah.
As long as one person starts, you know, and the trained professionals also do couples therapy. They do conflict resolution. They do marriage counseling, whereby they are trained professionals.
Mm.
They know how to engage different partners and they know how to, you know, deal with situations like these.
Yeah.
So it is actually very important, but it is important for someone to start. And definitely, you know, after some time when they see what the change in you, they will definitely get motivated to start as well.
Actually, you know, I asked this question because there was a point where I was encouraging my spouse, you know, back then, to say, you know what, I think we should go for counseling. You know, when you can see the triggers, you can see things are not so well. And he wasn't forthcoming. So I ended up not going myself. And I'm thinking just...
And you see, that's what I'm talking about.
Exactly, exactly. Perhaps there could be somebody also who's going through the same thing. You know what? She's thinking, you know what? I kept hearing on radio, Eagle FM, encouraging to say, you know what? Speak out and go for counseling. So actually they can then go by themselves and then be the change that they expect. And then somehow it encourages their partner to go along.
As long as you start some way, because you are expecting change in someone else, but you're also not willing to make that move. How fair is that?
Yeah.
Let's talk about
that. Exactly.
So, I mean, because above and beyond, above everything, you are individual.
You are
an individual yourself. The work should start from yourself. Because I always say, in whatever situation you face yourself with, you also have a part to play. When one individual starts undergoing therapy, the other partner might see the change and say, okay, this thing is really working. You know how sometimes we can be like, you know, if it's not working, then I'll not be.
Yeah.
But when somebody sees the change in you, it's definitely setting an example. You should never be discouraged, because you have started the work.
True.
You know, on an individual level, because working on yourself, introspection starts on an individual level. It starts from within you. When you fix yourself, you can fix other people.
True.
You know? So sometimes start with yourself and be an example, and definitely you might inspire others.
Yeah.
Especially in, you know, such kind of relationships where you're able to also inspire your partner.
Yeah, I like that. I just like that.
Start somewhere.
Exactly. Yes. Start somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
Of course... You know what? When it comes to mental health issues, and we see a lot of people around us who are really, it's either you are, if you know, there's something that they used to say, if you're not infected, you are affected. And then we are seeing things that we are hearing in the society, and especially news. You know, every now and then you are hearing very tragedy, painful news in the papers about how somebody has killed somebody, committed suicide, that kind of stuff. But then, Doc, is it really that somebody will just stand up and do something? Or is it really that sometimes there was something, you know, even, you know, like it was a step-by-step situation until it really pushed you to the core? And then we often maybe ignored the signs, ignored, or can it really also just happen like that? Snap. Or how, really?
You know, it can be all of those just basically mentioned. But one thing that we need to understand is that most of the time, you know, suicidal behavior, be it ideation, be it tendencies, be it attempts, they definitely form part of a bigger picture. And I just want to put it in layman. It definitely forms part of a bigger picture.
Yeah.
And in most cases, we are not saying in all of the cases, but in most cases, it reflects an underlying mental health challenge.
Yeah.
You know, we have mental health disorders. We have mental health challenges, of course.
What are mental illnesses?
You know, challenges, you know, before anything becomes an illness or a disorder, there are some certain types of behavior, some certain challenges that can eventually lead up to someone developing a full-blown disorder or a challenge.
Yeah.
So definitely in most cases, you know, suicidal behavior, as I said, suicidal, which encompasses suicidal ideation, or suicidal attempts, or just suicidal behavior in general, stems from a larger, you know, from something bigger.
Mm.
It's just not something in most cases. It can result from impulsive behavior, where we sometimes have personality disorders that come into play. But in most cases, definitely it's an underlying mental health condition, like depression, like, you know, substance use, like so many other mental health conditions that can actually lead someone to you know, want to commit suicide. Sometimes it's also just a cry for help. Somebody is suffering so much from the inside that it becomes a cry for help. Sometimes it's not necessarily that the person really wants to die, but it's that intense cry for help. Like, I need to be heard. I need to be seen. You know, my distress needs to become visible, because most of the time the suffering is not visible to anyone.
That's true.
So it could be so many things. Yeah. And this is why we say there's so much stigma. And, you know, in the past, even there were, you know, the way people would approach this kind of unfortunate incidents was quite different. But now that the understanding is there, so it could be a symptom of an underlying depression. You know, definitely suicide or suicidal ideation is a symptom in itself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have a lung infection or when you have a heart condition, you have symptoms.
Yes.
Either you have chest pain or shortness of breath, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to certain mental health conditions like depression, for example, suicidal ideation can also be a symptom of an underlying condition that needs to be treated. And so there's a lot of in-depth understanding that needs to go into this. It's not most of the time that someone just decides, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Sometimes people plan it. Sometimes people, because of the intense emotional distress and not seeking treatment or not having succeeded with treatment, it becomes a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely it is a sign of an underlying psychological distress. An illness, by example, an underlying depression, and it can be as a result of so many things. Of course, other factors come into play. As I said, it can be multifactorial.
Mm-hmm.
It can be stresses, environmental stresses, social stresses, financial stresses, relationship process that becomes so overwhelming that you don't just see any way out, or you just don't have...
you're kind of like
you just
hopeless.
Don't want to live anymore.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, and these are all. And also, let me just get back to. There's a whole neurobiology involved in this. I don't know if we're really aware that in our brain we've got certain chemicals, and especially when
I know about neurotransmitters.
Neurotransmitters, definitely. So I didn't want to. I wanted to bring it a little bit down, but let's talk about neurotransmitters. Yeah, for everyone to understand.
Yes, yes.
There are certain chemicals in the brain, and there's a whole neurobiology associated with it as well. That when there's a chemical imbalance in your brain, you can also start exhibiting some of this behavior. You know, we've got serotonin, we've got dopamine, you know, in the brain, your feel-good hormones, by example, your endorphins. And then when there is a mismatch or an imbalance in your brain as well, and this is where medical treatment actually comes in. So it is actually very, 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 very important. to understand
yeah.
some of the causes, and that it is very broad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doctor, I appreciate how you spoke that. It gives me a whole new question in regards to, we often criticize those that are on those medication, maybe to help balance their hormones and get them on another level to, so they can function well. But we often see it as mental health doctors are the problem, you know. Maybe they're making the situation worse, so I don't know just exactly how then should we perceive it. Because I think another fear is, I don't want to be taking certain medication, and maybe also the level type or the different types of medication, it's not the same.
Just I think over the years, with many medical disciplines, just in general, I mean, you know, I'm speaking very broadly.
Yes, we have
seen certain form of stigma over the years to different types of treatment, and different approaches were taken over the years. Mm-hmm. There is definitely a lot of stigma when it comes to mental health medications, mental health professionals, facilities. And I think it stems from within our communities. You know, I was made aware that there are some terminologies in vernacular that people use when it comes to either mental health conditions or mental health medication.
Yeah. And there's like a lot in my culture, they just call it the WADS number, like a particular word in Shakati.
Yes, and that is very stigmatizing. Nice. Yeah. And do you know what that does? That actually discourages people. And now we are saying, oh, why speak out, reach out? Why don't we want to talk about mental health? But then we have stigmatizing terms like that in the community. How do you also expect someone to speak out when, again, we are stigmatizing? We are using, you know, these terminologies, which then also, that would obviously discourage someone from seeking help. Now we're asking ourselves all of a sudden, yeah, but speak out. Why don't people want to speak out? Yet again, we are the ones criticizing, we are the ones stigmatizing, we are the ones using derogatory terms, we are the ones. So I think we also, as a society, we need to fix ourselves first.
And as an individual.
As an individual, because we have a tendency of pointing fingers. Like, but why didn't the person speak out? Why didn't they say something? If that person probably would have said something, would you have listened to them?
Wouldn't you have criticized?
Wouldn't you have criticized them? So there's a lot of stigma around especially mental health services. And up until we come to a point of realization that these are actual real medical conditions that can affect anyone and everyone, none of us, no one is exempt from developing any kind of mental disorder. But it is in the way we speak and the stigma in the community that also discourages people from seeking help.
You know what? I need to make them introspective myself.
And that is a big problem in the community, because you can't say, why did this and this person not speak out? But then we are using stigmatizing terms. We are using derogatory terms.
Towards them.
You know, not towards them, but towards mental health in general. You know, and different languages have different, you know, terms that honestly, it just makes stigma worse. It contributes to stigma.
Absolutely.
And it discourages people from taking medication. You know, from taking,
or even going to the hospital.
Yes, or even going to the hospital and being seen by mental health professionals because of the stigma that we have created in society. So there's really a lot of work, and this is where advocacy comes in. Going into the community and making sure that the awareness is there. People do understand. People do understand that the words and the weight of your tongue can actually also, you know, stop someone from seeking access to treatment. That is also very important. So all of us can, I think, and should start engaging in information sharing, accurate information. We should be able to educate ourselves. We should be able to inform ourselves and encourage people to seek help.
Doc, something coming to my mind. I'm just wondering, do you go to the north for mental advocacy and all that, do you?
Well, not yet, but I am in the process of collaborating, and I know a lot of advocates in the north as well. Not a lot, but quite a few.
Yeah.
And I think it's high time that as advocates we also, you know, start collaborating and working on projects together
Excellent.
In collaboration in order to, you know, combat stigma.
Yeah.
You know, I think stigma is the biggest contributor.
Yeah.
One of the biggest.
Yeah.
Not the biggest,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I think
one of the biggest.
Let me rephrase.
Yes, yes.
Is definitely one of the biggest. And if we look at it, it just comes from different forms. There's also self-stigma. I think that is something we are not paying attention to.
Okay.
And I think self-stigma is, it's really a challenge, because self-stigma is, I am who, I am this, I have this profession, I am this. I can't be going through this. I can't be going through a mental health challenge. I can't be seen going to a mental health facility.
Yeah,
I can't
yeah,
be seen,
yeah.
you know, I can't be seen as weak. I'm who's child, I'm related to who, I'm this, I'm that. And those are, self-stigmatization is very self-destructive. Because essentially you are your only obstacle to seeking treatment and access to treatment.
We'll continue that one right after this commercial break.
Hello, Namibia. The NSA is conducting the Household Income and Expenditure Main Survey from the 28th of April 2025 to the 22nd of April 2026. Our officials in NSA uniforms, IDs and branded vehicles will visit selected households in all 14 regions. Hashtag, your data matters.
And of course, we are back, and Dr. Brian was talking about stigma, self-stigmatization,
stigmatization. Yes.
Yeah. Thoroughly explain even the more. Of course, you spoke about in themes of I'm who's child. But it's so true, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say, for instance, a doctor saying, no, but I'm a medical doctor myself. How can I book myself to go and see, you know, a psychologist? What will they think about me?
Mm-hmm. That is definitely one of the forms of self-stigma. And what self-stigma does, not only does it hamper or interfere with you accessing or having accessibility to treatment, it also works on your self-confidence. You are also at the same time being very self-destructive, as I said. And it has a definitely a psychological impact on you, because you are delaying treatment yourself, but it's because of barriers that you have put around yourself, you know. So that is also very important, that we need to look into the self-stigmatization. To say that, okay, yes, I have this condition, but I can't take this medication, you know. And you would hear people saying things like, no, I just went to flush my medication down the toilet because, you know, I believe in myself. You know, yes, you believe in yourself. That is very important. It's a core, you know, the cognitive restructuring is very important, but everything goes hand in hand. And it's something that we overlook as a society, we are not paying much attention to self-stigmatization.
Yeah.
We also tend to blame others for stigmatizing, you know, communities and other individuals. But have we ever thought about the self-stigma? You'll be telling yourself, ah, but I'm okay. You know, I don't need professional help.
Yeah,
I can get over it. You know, I can sleep on it.
I'm a Christian.
Yes.
Let's talk about that one.
I can.
I'm supposed to pray this away.
Yes.
I'm not supposed to be feeling like this.
And that is very important. It's a component, but it's like a big puzzle, you know, where everything else comes into play. So definitely self-stigmatization plays a big part in personal recovery.
Yeah, yeah. You remind me of something that a very good friend of mine was telling me the other day, that I was feeling quite down, and she was like, you know what, since I'm a prayerful person, I want to be praying about certain things. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, then just go pray and say, no, you know what, Jesus, this is happening, this and this. Mm-hmm. I'm a human being too. I have feelings. Like, talk to him as if you're talking to him. And it's true, you know. Acknowledge yourself. Acknowledge the feelings that we often just bury everything and put on a brave face, even when we are in our own closets by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You want to put on a brave, but you know, in reality, you're not fine. Mm-hmm. You're dealing with this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really where we have to just, it first starts with honesty with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before.
Most definitely. It starts with yourself. It starts with, you know, being honest with yourself. And as I said, the self-awareness.
Mm.
You know, you need to be able to understand yourself as an individual. And yeah. I don't think many of us pay that much attention. The other day I was asking someone, how much time do you actually spend with yourself?
Mm.
Just you, yourself, understanding yourself, understanding what are your triggers, understanding what brings you joy, but also what brings you distress, you know. And I was telling someone the other day, I think for me as an individual, one of the things that is a reflection that something is not okay, or, you know, I'm exhausted, or, you know, there's just something going on, is my sleeping pattern.
Yeah.
As soon as my sleeping pattern becomes off, I know that I need to go back to the drawing board.
True.
I need to just sit, have introspection. What is bothering me?
Yeah.
What is right? What is not right?
We overlook.
What do I need to fix?
Yes.
What do I need to pay attention to?
Yeah.
This is where self-care also comes into play.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell people, you know, self-care is not going to Cape Town and going to the Bahamas and sipping on cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
Taking pictures and putting up
in your WhatsApp status.
Self-care starts with you, yourself, within the comfort of your own home.
Oh.
What are you doing to take care of your own personal well-being?
Yes.
Because your personal well-being is directly linked to your mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to understand yourself as an individual and understand what are your triggers. What works for you, what doesn't work for you, and be able to have that self-awareness to say, I have this and this and this issue.
Mm-hmm.
How am I dealing with it? Is it something that I need to go see a therapist for?
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that I can speak to a church counselor for?
Yeah.
Is it something, you know? We just need to put in work on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we want to talk about preventative measures when it comes to mental health, It starts with yourself, putting in the work, understanding yourself, who you are as an individual, understanding what are your triggers as an individual, and understanding how to go about this and how to go undergo treatment. That is very important.
Thank you, Doc. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, while we are, you know, sometimes I say to myself, I'm very privileged because, I mean, I can have a whole doctor in here and on air, I'm just getting counseling, first hand counseling, you know? Yeah. So, you know what? This is something that I've come to realize myself. When I get to a point where I'm exhausted, physically exhausted, everything, it now comes to translate into I'm now sort of like mentally also exhausted and I need rest at this point. I became so easily irritated, easily annoyed, easily triggered. And until I get that needed rest, I think I'll just be, And I've come to realize that so much to a point where I would really speak out to say, you guys, I'm not fine. I'm not fine. Do you want me at my best or do you want me just dragging?
Yeah.
And also that dragging might also cost me a lot of things.
Definitely.
Yeah, because you will snap on the wrong people and then you get into trouble, something like that.
Mm.
So you're talking about, you know, self-awareness. It's really, really important. And I think at this point, I also want to just add on to say, you know what? Let those around us be very sensitive to hear when somebody continuously say, you know what? I'm not fine.
Mm.
Physically, you can be looking fine.
Mm.
Maybe you just bought a new pair of shoes and a nice blazer. But wait, you look fine. Yes, but internally, I'm not fine.
Yeah.
And I think we really just have to open our ears to listen and say, regardless of who the person is, you know, whether it's the father in the house or the husband or, I don't know, the president, whosoever, when the person say they're not fine, let's give them space to just recharge, rejuvenate.
And recover as well.
And
that is also, you know, my earlier when we started, I said, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup.
You did.
And that's very important. We all need to refill, replenish our cups in order for you to serve and be able to execute. So those are also signs that your body will also let you know that it's about time to slow down. Whether it's just burnout, whether it's, you know, something else that's underlying. And it's good that you're saying you need to be self-aware. There are people that do not have that self-awareness.
Mm.
So you need to say, I'm becoming increasingly irritable. I'm becoming short-tempered. I snap at people early. What is going on? So in as much as we're taking care of our physical health, to say, I've gained 2 kilos this week. Mm-hmm. What's going on? What did I eat? What is wrong? What is off? It's the same with your mental health. It's the same. As much as we take care of our physical health, you know, I was even saying the other day and thinking, people go and they're saying, no, I did my medical checkup. You know, everybody is so, I did my annual checkup. Mm-hmm. And you'll be like, oh, so, you know. But then the mental health checkup doesn't come in. It's just about the physical. Mm-hmm. No, my tests are fine and everything mm-hmm. is fine, so I'm fine. But have we looked at that WHO definition of health?
Yeah.
Physical, mental, and social well-being. So physically you're okay.
Mm-hmm.
What about the mental aspect? Did you do a mental health check-in? Mm-hmm. Did you see someone? Many times people think that you need to go to a therapist just because something is wrong with you. But that's not always the case.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's a good space to, you know, to do some reflections, to share some personal burdens, to share some triggers. And there are different types of professionals, yet again, as I've mentioned, that, you know, can also, that you can, you know, interact with, to just have a good mental hygiene.
Mm.
You know, that's what I like to call it,
mm-hmm.
mental hygiene.
Mm-hmm.
Physical hygiene, we're on point. We take care of it. But what about our mental hygiene? And you know, what comes into play with mental hygiene is also, what are my thoughts? What am I feeding my thoughts with?
Mm.
What am I watching on social media? The type of news, the type of books that I'm reading, the type of people that I'm interacting, the type of conversations that we are having.
Yeah.
Those are, it's all part of your mental hygiene. How does
the environment
affect your environment you're in? Affects your mental hygiene.
Mm.
And sometimes you need to just clear some of those things
and clean
out.
It.
And clean it to make sure that you are, you know, mentally healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that we are not cognizant about. Who you have in your immediate circle, what you surround yourself with, the type of conversations that you are having, the type of people that you're interacting with, as I said,
mm-hmm.
what you watch on the news, the type of news that you are watching, or the type of even the things like the type of television programs that
mm-hmm.
you are watching,
everything
that you are feeding into your system has a significant impact on your mental
Absolutely.
Health. Absolutely. And sometimes we're just not aware of this.
Mm-hmm. Doc, I specifically love how you say what type of maybe series or what type of movies, what type of whatever it is that you're watching on social media. You know, there was a point in my life where if I see, of course, I mean, I'll look at people on social media, maybe on Facebook or wherever, YouTube, and you see this couple, they're cuddling, and you're like, oh, wow, that's so cute. Before I know it, I'm dealing with lust. Like,
definitely.
The thing is, you know, it's heavy on me. I'm like, where did this come from? You know?
Yes.
And it's so heavy. And you're single, and you're like, what?
Mm. And so you know what? Those are actually significant contributors to some mental health conditions as well, because now you're seeing people with perfect bodies and then you look at yourself and you're like, what's happening?
Mm.
You know, so when it comes from that point as well, that perspective, it's also very important. Some might say, yeah, but it's your interpretation of it. But remember, at the end of the day, you're also just human.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's very important what and who you expose yourself to. Of course, some of those things you can use it as a motivation.
Yeah.
But remember, interpretation from person to person is different.
True.
So people lose their self-confidence, people
mm-hmm.
lose their self-esteem because they see what the ideal world is supposed to look like on social media. But hey, let me tell you something. You don't know what that person behind the content is going through as well.
That's true.
So everybody has their own challenges. The ability to deal with those challenges is what makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
That
is actually very important.
Yeah. I've been selfish this whole time. You know, when conversation is going so well, I forget to open the studio line. Anyway, our studio line is now open. 083-288-4041 is the number in studio. Should you have a question, an opinion, a contribution, please come through. 083-288-4041 is the number in studio. Yeah. I think now I understand so very well when you speak about, you know, when you're passionate about it, you will continuously, you know, be doing it, and then, you know, I'm noticing that now. I think we've partially spoke about this, but maybe not so direct. At the time, the Minister of Health, Dr. Esperanza Luminda, spoke about how
health professionals themselves, doctors, nurses, go through a lot of challenges themselves. You know, they're faced with mental health challenges. And of course, one aspect we can't overlook is sometimes the hours, and you see how exhausted the person. And maybe when they do get their days off, they have to be there, they have to be that. And especially when they have family at home as well. So I think at this point, I would want you to address them, you know, and you did speak about stigma, you know, I would want you to address them so that, of course, let's not lose any lives to mental health because they don't want to speak up because, hey, I'm a doctor or I'm a nurse or, you know, I work in the health fraternity. Mm. I can't be seen going to, a psychologist or a social worker.
Definitely, you know, I think the every profession comes with their challenges.
True.
Most definitely. And what you have highlighted is so important to say that we need to remember when I said you can't pour from an empty cup. So as healthcare professionals, we also need to take care of ourselves. And this is where self-care comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever time you have to your avail, we all need to make sure that we do introspection, we check in on ourselves, but also have support systems. We need support systems.
Mm-hmm.
Many times, you know, everybody is just doing their own thing and going about their own lives. But I think in general, we have also lost that sense of community. And it goes everywhere. We have lost that sense of community to say, I know this person is going through this and this, or having this challenging job or whatever it is, but how can I also, you know, come through for this person, you know? So that is actually very important.
Even if it's just staying with their kids for that weekend.
Or even just, you know, checking in. Hi, how are you? Are you good? Is everything okay? That is very important. Sometimes we tend to get so busy as individuals. But checking in on each other is very important. But it all comes back to self-awareness, knowing where your limits are, checking in on yourself. Am I okay? Am I not okay? And then also knowing that resources are available. There is help everywhere. And sometimes, as I said, you know, you might, as a hero, as a superhero, you also don't want to appear weak. Sometimes it's not even the fact that there is no help available. We don't know. Again, it comes to the self-stigma. I'm strong. I'm supposed to be strong. I'm supposed to be looking, you know, out for others. But then also, we need to learn how to look after ourselves as individuals, how to practice self-care, how to know when we are not okay, and when to know, you know, when to seek help. That is actually very important.
That's true.
And definitely self-care is important because it also encompasses mental health. It's some of the strategies of, you know, dealing with mental health strategies.
Doctor, I don't want to have to not ask this particular one. In terms of, you know, we're in a society where you find maybe your sibling or yourself, you have a good job. But you did put in the work, like you went in, you studied a really good course and landed a really good job, and it's paying you really well. And your family and the society, your community where you're coming from, see you as very well established. Or and then as a result, everybody comes keep knocking at your door. My daughter needs $500 for this and this and this. I need this and this, and another one is pulling from here. Until, you know, they kind of like really want to see at this point, I'm taking care of my bills and maybe I'm paying off my car. I'm trying to save up for a house. But you know, it now gets to a point where they feel like overburdened and it also now translates into mental challenges. What then advice would you give to such a person?
Most definitely. That one is a difficult one.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've been talking about black text and how that significantly also, you know, contributes.
I don't call it black text, don't talk. I feel like my mother did all this. I can only, you know, but of course they should be able to understand when I can't come through that time. But
You know, commonly in society, mostly it's being referred to as black text. But it doesn't
True.
You know, it's definitely something that's happening. And a lot of young people are faced with it. You know, sometimes you are the first one to graduate from university. Mm. Sometimes you're the first one to have graduated from university, bringing income.
Mm.
I think the most important is setting boundaries. And I know that's not very easy.
Yeah, that's not very easy.
It's easy to say, set boundaries.
Mm.
But personal boundaries and also boundaries within your structures.
Mm.
And that's why planning, financial budgeting, to say that this is what would be available and this is what would not be available.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It is very important for us to get back to the drawing board. And I know it's something very difficult. Sometimes we do not have the answers. But setting boundaries is very important. Instead of somebody saying, I need 500 immediately for this, you say, but I only have 200. I can only help you with the 200.
Yeah.
Unfortunately,
yeah.
My situation only allows for me to help you with a 200, by example, for now. Unfortunately, I just can't. And we should be able to understand when people tell us, I can't or I'm not possible. It comes back to the community aspect again. And sometimes people will not understand because we do not communicate with them directly, you know, to say somebody will also not know that you are not able to if you don't tell them. So sometimes, again, we do not want to appear as weak. We do not want to appear as
stingy.
So, you know, and those are environmental or social factors that come into play. You know, in our spectrum.
Yes.
There can also be stresses, financial stresses, and hardships that can also contribute to, you know, people developing, you know, various mental health conditions. Financial stresses, definitely. Triggers, definitely. Let's be cognizant of each other. Let's try and understand everybody's human. Everybody is dealing with some sort of struggle. It is difficult, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
But I think, just to sum up, setting boundaries is very important. People might not like you for setting boundaries,
but
remember your mental health comes first.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your mental health comes first. Yeah. I don't know. I can only hope that whoever is listening, or they're going to listen afterwards, because we do put it up on our podcast and they're going to be able to access it. I pray that this is going to be something that they'll be like, yeah, you know, when something is being spoken about, and especially by somebody who understands exactly what is going on. I could come here and speak on mental health as if I really have the, on only that little bit, you know.
Yes.
But you know, yeah, I can only hope that really these are things that we can put into practice ourselves and make introspectives on where we need to be more accommodative, you know, for one another. With that being said, let's talk about, children. Yeah. It's something that I always like to like pop in there, in regards to like children. For instance, as parents, I know sometimes we don't seem to really hear them, or maybe you dealing with having to deal with children, think you'll understand more, compared to us parents, you know, because then they open up and say, no, but mommy doesn't do this. So I wish mommy can. What are those, some of those, situations that, have come to your attention that I made you realize that, you know what, I think parents should be doing this, and perhaps there are certain things that they shouldn't be doing.
You know what I keep on saying? I always look at it like a pot of clay.
Okay.
When it comes to shaping personalities and how we perceive things and mental health in general, it's like a pot of clay. When you are a child, it's molded up until it comes to a certain age or a stage where this pot of clay cannot be molded anymore. It's fixed.
Yes.
So the molding and the shaping is very important. Parental styles is very important. And I know it's difficult, you know, because you have to take into consideration so many aspects.
Yeah.
One thing we need to know, you know, even as a parent, is that a lot of trauma and adversities, mental health adversities that happen during childhood, tend to manifest later in life. At that time, the trauma that the child perceives, you know, be it physical, be it parental separation, mm-hmm. be it whatever, mm-hmm. because of their cognitive development, where their mind is, they will not be able to process that trauma. They will not be able to understand it.
Mm.
They will only be able to understand it from the age of 12, 13, going into adolescence.
Mm.
And this is sometimes where we start seeing the manifestations of underlying mental health conditions mm-hmm. because of things that have happened prior.
Yeah.
So it is very important for us to be aware of our children's mental health,
yeah.
what we expose them to, the adversities that they go through, mm-hmm. you know, validating their feelings,
mm-hmm.
Also raising them with foundational principles and safe spaces as to, you know, informing them that they can actually become aware of the feelings, like you were saying, you know, you were making an example of your son that often maybe cries maybe too much, but you have provided a safe space. This person sort of starts knowing how to deal with their distress.
Mm.
But you should also be able to tell them that when you're in this situation, there are other ways of dealing with it as well.
Okay.
You know, so it's a constant molding and shaping and, definitely, one thing that parents need to take into consideration is that parenting styles play a big role and impact into how that child's mental health, you know, how it will develop over time. So that's also very important. That we need to be cognizant of that as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you think perhaps if I see my child, I don't know, something is off, is it only that mental health facilities are only for adults, or
no? it's across the spectrum.
Okay.
It's for children. It's for adults. In fact, you do get those professionals that only specialize in child mental health
or
pediatric mental health, child and adolescent mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So there are specific specialists that are trained.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are, of course, specialists across the spectrum and healthcare professionals that are that are trained to work with children as well.
Sort of like pediatrics or pediatricians.
Yes. But child pediatrics or child mental health, child and adolescent mental health. Because that particular age group also in itself presents with its own challenges.
Okay.
But there's always help.
there's always help available. That's true.
And this is what I've been saying, and you know, part of what I'm looking into advocacy and even collaborating with other advocates is that and I speak under correction, but school health programs need to strengthen mental health programs. You know, we need to do a bit of resilience teaching, cognitive behavioral therapy, it needs to be incorporated already in school health programs. And then today I was even thinking, you know, some of these things can even should be taught, you know, in Sunday school programs from the child is very small. Like, this is how you deal with distress. This is how you deal with, you know, just from a very young age, sort of teach them, you know, how do you know you are not well? How do you know you're unwell? You know, if this is happening, building resilience need to start from a very, 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 very young age. We need to start having these conversations, even in churches, in schools.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, most of the time that we actually spend and that our kids actually spend are in school as a church. You know, it's very little that you will be actually spending time with your child, because majority of the time they're either at school or they're at Sunday school or church programs or whatever. So I think even faith-based organizations need to look into how to incorporate mental health components in their teachings.
Yes, and
that
not
is
just
very important.
I wanted to suggest that myself. I'm so glad you said it. And not just for children, but for everybody.
For everyone.
I think even church-based organizations, many a times they don't know how to handle such situations. You know, it's not something that you pray away. It's not something that you encourage faith on, you know. Of course, prayer has its part in it, and encouragement and Bible studies has its part in it. But, you know, where the doctor has to come in, whether it's a social worker, a psychologist, you know, I always say that, you know what, God has given wisdom and he has given it to the doctors out there so that they can treat us. You know, he has given it to the teachers so they can teach us, to the lawyers so they can, you know, and we need to make use of that wisdom and that knowledge that in those gifts that he's given to man. So,
yeah, most definitely.
Agree. You know what? We have sincerely come to the conclusion of our beautiful conversation. But Doc, I think I would say, what society are you looking forward to when we talk about mental health and mental wellness and advocacy? What is your goal? You know, of course, not on your own, but collectively, you know, just what is that, goal that you see, not just for Namibia, but mental health on every scale for every human being out there? What is it? Yeah.
I think, for me, number one, where I, the vision that I see, and is number one for us to, you know, end the stigma against mental health. And everyone should be able to have normal conversations about mental health. I should be having a normal conversation about mental health with a 70-year-old, 80-year-old, you know, elderly person from my village, by example. You know, we should be able to break those barriers. We should be able to have these uncomfortable conversations, because it is only through uncomfortable conversations that we can find comfortable solutions. And that is very important. So I foresee a future where all services, including mental health, physical health, social well-being, are on the same level. We embrace them the same in the community. And an inclusive community whereby people are encouraged to speak out, to seek for help comfortably, and also be proud, you know, of being able to speak out, being proud of being advocates as well. Because in essentially that is actually very important, and that is my vision.
I appreciate that. But you know what? It's been such a wonderful conversation. You know, I like how you are able to transfer the knowledge that you have in layman terms.
Thank you so much.
All of us can really understand, you know.
Thank you so much.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Sure.
It was indeed a pleasure.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Of course, we have come to the conclusion of today's conversation with being, let's talk about mental health again and again and again. And I don't think we can ever exhaust this topic. And I know Dr. Brian has a lot more that he can expand, you know, for us to actually understand and make better choices. But what I would leave with you and I is that let's make some introspectives. You know, we have to criticize and, you know, let's end the stigma. At the end of the day, we can't be criticizing. We're naming a word and, you know, it's viral. If I go to a Shakati hospital now, people will be talking about, sending out some sort of stigma to say, no, she went to ward 16, and you expect me to, and you, if I do something that kind of like triggers my situation, then you're going to be like, why didn't she speak out? Why didn't she go to ward 16? But that's because you and I were criticizing it in the first place. So let's move away from that, and let's also have this conversations. Man, please speak out, speak to your friend, speak to your leader, speak to your colleague and sisters. Let's still go out and cry on each other's shoulders, you know, and let's not forget to knock on that particular door on, a hospital, any hospital. You can just check yourself in and, you know, say, I'm not fine. And I'm sure they will actually speak to you. They will direct you. They will know what to do with you, you know. At the end of the day, let's fight the situation together collectively, you know. Let's not just look at it from one angle, but like Dr. said, it's kind of like a holistic approach. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. So let's definitely do that. Now from Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye. Have yourself a wonderful Saturday evening, and I hope that you rest well tomorrow on Sunday. If you're going to work, well, I sure hope that when you're finally off, you get to rest so very well. Now that's all from me, Indafa Happy Juju. Good night. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Do stay tuned for Thought Digest. This is coming up shortly. Goodbye.